Thanks, Rob. Thank you so much for the introduction. Awesome to be with you guys again. It's amazing how many weeks we've accomplished, and it's flying along. At least it feels like it for me. We are in chapter 11 of part 2, fourth edition, page 369, flooded with feeling. When a barrier to God collapsed, this self-described agnostic was at step 3. So this is a fourth edition addition to the book. And that being the case, and since the person is still with us, the author is still with us, there's really no data on him. I couldn't drum up anything, but I did not get disappointed by that. And then I noticed that the story was on the shorter side, and I was wondering, like, you know, how are we going to pull, you know, some gems out of this thing? And sure enough, God provides, and it was right there in the three quarters through the story. So we like to look at why these stories are included, what's unique about them, what's significant about them that would warrant them to be added to the book, because, of course, the purpose for them to be in the book is to increase identification with potential members or members. So the first thing we saw, and we saw it obviously in the title there, is the fact that he's an agnostic. So there's not that many of them in the book. And we are used to more of the type that would be the Fitzmaugham story, our Southern friend, where he's an agnostic, but has a spiritual experience or awakening, and is now fully on board with the whole God question. So we're more used to something like that. I think what makes this story special is that's not exactly how it goes. And that made it significant to me. So agnosticism, a unique form of agnosticism, and also another factor that's in the story that I think made it worthy of inclusion is he did suffer from severe depression and was suicidal for a period of time. So dealt with that via therapy and meds, and that was that. So. That being the case, I was also able to extrapolate from the reading that his year of sobriety, his approximate year of sobriety is going to be about 1990. So give you a little perspective of where he's coming from. So let's get going and let's find out this guy's story. When I first came to AA, I thought everyone had drunk more than I had, that everybody had gotten into more trouble. But I kept coming to meetings, and after a while, I began to hear the beginnings of their story. I came to realize that I was on the same road. I just hadn't gone as far yet. I had my first drink in my senior year of high school. That first night, I slipped out of the window so my parents wouldn't hear me leave. There were four of us, and we only brought four bottles of homebrew. I never made that mistake again. The next week, a bunch of us went camping, and we brought cases of beer. We finished it all. The others drank a lot too, but I was the one who woke up in the middle of the night and started wandering around the countryside by the light of the moon. I was the one who walked for miles searching for something. I know now what I was looking for. Unlike the rest of them, I wanted another drink. I had a great time that summer between high school and college. It revolved around drinking and football, drinking and hunting, drinking and playing pool, drinking and driving. Nothing really bad happened, but it could have. I nearly got arrested. A friend had just missed being shot. The car I was riding in stopped just before it crashed. I don't think most moderate social drinkers remember so clearly the night they had their first drink. I'm sure that very few of them make that date into an annual celebration by getting as drunk as possible. It was in my second year of drinking that I started saying that if you can still feel your face, you're not drunk enough. In my third year, I drank homemade peach wine, and when it was gone, I had some whiskey. That night, I vomited in a blackout. Soon I found that I didn't get as sick on vodka. Drinking vodka was like something out of science fiction. I could be someplace one moment and instantly transported to somewhere else the next. I could never seem that happy balance. I remember going to a party. I started drinking and suddenly I could talk to anybody. I was having a lot of fun, but I kept on drinking. Soon I could barely walk. A friend drove me home that night, but I sometimes drove a car when I was too drunk to walk. I became a teacher and didn't drink too often for a while. When I did drink, I almost always got drunk. The teachers would get together a couple times a year for a poker party. I usually didn't drink anything. One time I did, and I made a fool of myself. I decided that drinking just wasn't fun anymore. I quit. My cure for drinking was isolation. I would get up, go to work, come home, watch TV, and go to bed. It got to the point where I couldn't remember anything good that had ever happened. I couldn't imagine anything good ever happening in the future. Life had shrunk down to an endless, awful now. The depression became so bad that only medical treatment kept me from killing myself. After 7 months, the doctor took me off the medication. I wasn't suicidal, but I wasn't very happy either. A new teacher came to my school, and I invited myself over to her place for a drink. I remember telling her, as I lifted the glass, that this might not be such a great idea, but I believe it's worth the risk. As casually as that, I began drinking again. At the winter break, she went to visit her boyfriend, and I was alone again. 2 days before Christmas, I went to a party. I wasn't going to drink because I had driven there, and I knew that drinking and driving was a bad idea for me. I wasn't feeling particularly good or bad, just a little uncomfortable because I didn't know most of the people there. I was sitting on the couch 1 minute and up drinking a glass of wine the next. There was no conscious premeditation at all. This is the point when many people say, and I went on drinking for 10 more years. Instead, an odd thing happened. A few days later, a teacher came up to me at work and said that she was an alcoholic and that she was going to AA. She had never seen me drink, so I don't know what made her do that. The next day, I asked her how often she went to meetings. Once a week, I asked. No, she said that she had been going nearly every day for almost 6 months. That seemed a little extreme, but I thought maybe if I went to a meeting with her, it might help her out. Besides, I was lonely. Halfway through the meeting, I had the strangest idea. People were introducing themselves as alcoholics. And I had this urge to do the same. This was peculiar because I wasn't, of course. Later, my friend asked me what I thought of the meeting. I said that I didn't really know. It was only much later I realized that for the first time in years, I felt that I belonged. The next day we went to another meeting, and this time I did say I was an alcoholic. I went to the third meeting by myself. I was nervous. I felt as if I were about to jump out of my skin. I did something that was amazing to me. Before the meeting, I stuck out my hand and introduced myself as a newcomer. I had someone to talk to. I calmed down. From time to time, I would tell the truth. I said in a meeting that I was afraid to get a sponsor because I was afraid he might ask me to do something. I left that meeting with a phone number. I called it, and sure enough, my new sponsor started leading me through the steps using the big book. I called him every day. I told him that I just didn't want to be an alcoholic. He said it didn't matter what I wanted. The question I had to answer for myself was whether I was or I wasn't. He even suggested that I could try a little controlled drinking if I wasn't sure. I knew I had never been able to do that. I didn't have to do any more research. All I really had to do was review the drinking I had already done. I remember telling a friend years ago that I didn't have a drinking problem. I had a stopping problem. We laughed. It was true, but there was something else going on, something that never occurred to me until I came to AA. I didn't just have a stopping problem. I had a starting problem too. No matter how often I stopped or for how long, I always started drinking again. After not drinking for 3 months, I was on the phone with the friend who had taken me to that first meeting. I was complaining to her about problems at work and how my sponsor didn't understand me. Later in the conversation, I mentioned that even when I described myself as an agnostic, I thought maybe something was watching out for me. She asked, "Isn't it about time you made a decision?" And I love that because that is obviously the third step there. And I think what it's really highlighting for us is the idea that there's choice in 1, 2, and 3. The idea of we can decide, we can surrender to the idea that we are powerless and our life is unmanageable. We can decide, we can choose to be willing to accept HP into our life. And we can choose to make the decision. These are all within our grasp at this point, 1, 2, and 3. And that the only thing that keeps us from doing those is the lack of willingness. I knew where to look in the big book, and I had been careful to avoid it until then. I turned to the third step prayer and quietly read it to her over the phone. Nothing happened. I didn't expect anything to happen. Then, for some reason, I turned back to the words, "No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. They echoed in my mind. Something happened. A barrier collapsed. Without moving or speaking, I was carried away on a flood of emotion. Yet, at the same time, I was completely aware of myself and my surroundings. I could hear my friend's voice asking me what had happened to me. I couldn't answer. I still can't explain it. I know that I took the third step, turning my will and my life over to a higher power that night, because I began writing a fourth step inventory the next day. And I continued to write until I did the fifth step with my sponsor. Soon I had a list of people I had harmed. I talked about each of the amends with my sponsor. By the time I had started setting things right with my family, I began to feel a lot better." Now, if you ask me, those three paragraphs from starting from, I knew where to look in the big book, those three paragraphs are, in my mind, a beautiful example of a spiritual experience. The idea of reading the third step prayer over to another alcoholic on the phone, nothing really happening, sort of a light go off, refocusing in on the prayer, going to the line, "No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles," and something happens. Some sort of light switch happens, and he describes it as he is flooded with emotion. A flood of emotion. And obviously that's where the title of the story comes from. But what's really neat about this, and what I think this is where the uniqueness I was referring to on the in the very beginning, is the idea that although he's describing to us what the third step says, and he has it in the parentheses, "turning my will and my life over to higher power." Actually, the step says "over to God" in the actual step. But he's not saying that he did that. He's saying what he's done is that he knows that he has done the third step because he starts writing the fourth. He's only reminding the reader, "turning my will and my life over to the higher power." So what I think is really interesting in this is that he remains doubtful. He remains not having tangible feeling about God, higher power, a prime mover, but yet knows he's still in motion. He's still moving. And what's the lines? What's the lines that resonate so much with him? The idea of the no one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. He's saying there's an imperfectness, an imperfection to this experience that I've had, and that's okay. And I think when we include this story in the big book, we're adding more depth and breadth to the definition of what it means to be on a spiritual journey. He's not actually moved into the camp yet. Now, part of it is also, I know what's on the next page, but we see how he stays in this zone and it's okay. And he's a, you know, a full-blooded member, sober. So I think this is a jump forward in maybe the description of people's awakenings, experiences, agnostic, atheist, you know, believer, non-believer. And again, I think he's purposefully using higher power in his description to the reader of what the third step says, sort of softening some of the religiousness of it, the dogmaticness of it. And I think it makes it special, because what's the purpose of the story then? The story is when this guy comes and he debates me about, you know, I'm agnostic, and you know, he's going to tell me all these things. Well, dude, I got the story for you, page 369, you know, so identification comes right there. All right, let's keep going. More than 11 years later, it's hard to recapture the feelings of that night. So that's where I'm coming up with his approximate sobriety date. So we know this is 2001 is our publication of the fourth edition. So that means that he would have written it, you know, right prior to that. So that means that he would have come in 1990. Another thing that we can extrapolate this is that he's had a very short drinking career, and we know he's become a teacher, so we can ballpark his age there. We know he's only been teaching a few years. We can see that. We can glean that from the pages. So he's probably coming in mid-20s, mid to late 20s, and he's writing this mid to late 30s with his 11 years in. Okay. What do I believe as a result? I can say that doubting God's existence was no barrier at all to a spiritual experience. Also, I can say that having such experience didn't lead me to any certainty about God. Alcoholics Anonymous gives me the freedom to believe and to doubt as much as I need to. I do know that my life is different now. I haven't had a drink since I came to AA. I have fewer resentments, and I don't spend much time thinking about the past. I found that my experience can be helpful to other people. I have come to believe that hard times are not just meaningless suffering, and that something good might turn up at any moment. That's a big change for someone who used to come to in the morning feeling sentenced to another day of life. When I wake up today, there are lots of possibilities. I can hardly wait to see what's going to happen next. I keep coming back because it works. So, yeah, and that whole last paragraph, I think, is the example of him moving. First of all, we learn he has no slips. He comes in that first time and he says clearly right there, have not had a drink since. And then we see that he does understand the forward motion to getting to 12, how his story can help the next person. And then we also see the psychic change of that everything is not just for the meaningless suffering, that there's a bigger thing going on here. And anyway, on that, I'm going to end. Thank you so much.